Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net. So in today's show, we'll be talking about PACA, Participatory Appraisal of Competitive Advantage. And many of you have asked us why we've not spoken about this topic before. And the reason is actually that we were really afraid that people would think that we're abusing our new platform of the LEDcast to promote our methods. So Jörg, maybe for people who's never heard about PACA before, what does it stand for and where does it come from?
Well, let me perhaps just briefly summarize what it's all about. And effectively, there's two ways at looking at PACA, or two ways to explain PACA. The one way would be to say, well, it is kind of a rapid appraisal methodology, a method where you can do a very practical and very action-oriented diagnosis of a locality in a very short period of time. And by short, we would talk about, say, 2 weeks, and maybe even less. The other way to explain it would be to say, well, it is a specific kind of approach to local economic development that is based on specific types of concepts, such as competitiveness, competitive advantage. It's very much driven by an understanding of private sector principles and business sector principles. And it is also very much looking at an LED process as a learning process and as a participatory process.
So we will not today discuss exactly how to go about doing a PACA, but we thought it's maybe important to maybe discuss some of these things that you've just briefly described in a little bit more detail, because we are constantly surprised how when we're involved in LED, these things resurface the whole time. And maybe I should start off by saying that you explained that there's a very intense period to PACA that's typically a week or 2 weeks or 10 working days. But we also see LED as a continuous process where a whole lot of things happen and where something like intense PACA activity would maybe be the start or something that happens every 6 months or every year. So we see LED as a process that is ongoing, but the intensity of the ongoing process might be fluctuating over time. Why don't you take us back to the start of time and the foundations of PACA?
Well, as you know, before I went into this whole area of local economic development, I used to be a policy researcher, so writing books and publishing articles all the time. And what happened then was that exactly 12 years ago, in 1996, I conducted a research project in a region of Brazil where we looked at three industrial clusters and we tried to understand the region of those clusters and tried to find out where their competitive advantage came from. One of the things that came up in that context was that there actually was a lot of potential at the local level to do something about creating a competitive advantage. And that is basically how it started. So I kept in touch with people in some of those localities. And then 2 years later, 1998, we started to do the first exercises, which then created what later evolved into the PACA methodology.
So, Jörg, when we introduced PACA in South Africa, a few years ago when I was still with GTZ, we effectively introduced PACA as LED. We sometimes, on purpose, allowed people to find it difficult to distinguish between PACA and LED. And that was because so many of the development principles that is involved in PACA are also the principles that we see as good development principles in LED. What could be other ways that one could describe PACA?
One of the ways I like to describe PACA is to say, well, there is something like a genetic code in anything that you do. I mean, like whenever you start an organization, its genetic code, it's created at its inception, obviously. And that same thinking also applies to a methodology. So when we started with those exercises around local economic development in some localities in Brazil, we did that under the umbrella of local business chambers. So it wasn't government that was driving this process. It was the private sector, the organized private sector, who was initiating these activities. What happened was that those local business chambers had for a long time been involved in community activities, sponsoring activities, stuff like that. But they then noticed that there was also a serious economic challenge that they were facing in their localities. And their mindset initially actually was to say, well, we need to attract more companies. So the LED mindset in Brazil in the 1990s was around attracting investors, large corporations who would create thousands of jobs in just one go. And that was how we started. So the initial idea was to say, well, we need to conduct a very quick appraisal that permits us, that allows us to draw up some kind of a flyer or some kind of a brochure so that a locality can market itself. Those places didn't have proper statistics. They didn't have a very clear understanding of their of the locality factors, of the production factors that were available there, of the assets that were available there. So we thought we need a kind of appraisal to quickly come up with those kinds of that kind of information. And what we then learned in the course of that exercise was that there actually were so many local opportunities and that it was much more promising to explore those local opportunities involving local stakeholders rather than hoping for the one big external investor.
Okay, so that's one way of describing the PACA process. Another way that I like to explain PACA to people is to explain it as a toolkit, where we basically have a framework, which is very similar to the project management framework or any kind of a process design framework. And in that framework, we have a number of tools that we can use, and all of these tools are rooted very deep in some other theory or some other body of knowledge, like the difficulties of mobilizing local stakeholders towards a change process. There's a whole body of literature behind that, and we have tools for that. I think instinctively when you started off with PACA, you also put together tools around competitiveness. And who else to involve in something like this than the work of Michael Porter, Five Forces and the Diamond of Competitiveness. So I often describe PACA also as a toolkit and say, well, if you're a development practitioner and you develop a LED process, you would probably end up on something that looks very much like the outline of a PACA process. But what the PACA toolkit then gives you would be various tools that you can use to analyze the local economy, to facilitate change, to find opportunities for upgrading. I found that a lot of people, though, don't like the term competitiveness. And they feel that when we use the word competitiveness or that when we use PACA, we're immediately excluding a large number of beneficiaries or poor people. How do you respond to that kind of statement?
As a matter of fact, I think we might actually have a whole separate episode on that topic. But just to respond briefly, what we find in any locality is that in the local economy, there's typically insiders and outsiders, or to put it in sociological terms, there's lots of people who are excluded from opportunities, from personal and economic growth opportunities. And what we try to achieve with our local economic development effort is to pull in as many of those excluded people as possible. So we try to break through the traditional pattern where the well-connected, the better off, the powerful are getting all the benefits from local economic development, and we try to spread the gains much wider. But maybe let me come back to what we just talked about, the kind of genetic code and this issue of competitiveness. So competitiveness definitely was one of the starting points. As a matter of fact, when we did the very first exercise, the very first thing that we did was a workshop with local stakeholders organized around Michael Porter's Diamond. And that worked exceptionally well. The local stakeholders were extremely happy with the results and the insights they got from that. We were extremely happy because it gave us a lot of ideas about the local economy. And we've used that tool ever since. However, what I used to argue in those days was that PACA was conceptually based on three lines of thought, or three schools of thought, or three approaches. One of them being competitive advantage, one of them being P PRA, Participatory Rural Appraisal, actually, because about a year before we started with that, I had gone through a brief training on these methods, which I found extremely useful and extremely appealing, and it gave me all sorts of ideas how to transfer that into a more, well, a town setting or an urban setting and in a more in an industrial setting. And the third element those days I very much like to introduce as the postmodern epistemological approach to development processes, which was a very fancy and slightly arrogant way of saying, well, reality is constructed. Reality is not something that is just there. And when you look at the reality of a local economy, the numbers only tell you so much. And you really have to figure out what kind of perceptions the local actors have. And you often find that local actors have kind of a story going, that there is a shared story on what the local economy is all about. And in some of those early exercises, we actually found that that story was so far removed from the reality that it was absolutely striking. Anyway, this whole idea of understanding that doing conventional research only takes you so far was really one of the driving forces in PACA in the very early days. Just to come back to those cluster studies we did in 1996, so that was proper research. We went out, we conducted so many interviews with a representative set of companies. We got a really in-depth picture of what was happening inside those clusters. We could really draw a scientifically sound picture of what happened there, of what the advantages and the disadvantages were. And also based on the academic literature, on very robust academic literature, we could come up with recommendations in terms of what needed to be done. And then the local stakeholders didn't give a hoot. Because our description, our very sound analysis just didn't match with their perception. So it was more like, well, it was something like the local immune system reacting to our research and just rejecting it. Never mind the fact that it was sound research. What happened was it was external people who had done that, and we locally, we guys know different and we know better, and therefore this is not going to affect us very much. And that was one of the experiences that very much informed PACA and the whole design of PACA in terms of involving local stakeholders as much as possible, getting beyond the more traditional approach where the external consultants do some kind of magic and apply some mysterious methodology and then come up with a huge PowerPoint presentation in font style, font size 12 or smaller, which many of the local stakeholders can't really grasp and find very strange.
So something that I also like to explain to people, if we use the metaphor of PACA as a toolkit.
If we then use a third way to describe PACA would be to say PACA could also be an ongoing process where there's some very intense periods of work. But what is very interesting is that I think that I've used the PACA framework and I've plugged in many, many tools and in fact even often designed my own tools on the fly. And a lot of people, when they hear about this, they're very surprised because they think PACA is a very strict MISO partner product where there's just a couple of methods and a couple of things, and that if you don't do things Jörg's way, then you'd better hide the fact that you're using a PACA.
Or use a different name.
I mean, there's many. I think that's probably the sign that you've developed quite a good tool here, because there are so many varieties of variations of PACA out there that's very similar. But I think the important point is that once you have a good framework, once you use good development principles, that is about equipping the locals and getting them involved in the analysis and getting them involved in the problem solving, you can plug in almost any tool in there.
As a matter of fact, I did see the first ever LACA presentation just a few days ago, and I really had a good laugh about that. Anyway, I think there's two things I would like to comment on that. On the one thing, of course, we don't say that PACA is a strict, rigid methodology, and there is only one way and only this one ideal way to do it, and that everything else is every other approach is flawed. So you definitely want to be flexible in the way you conduct a PACA exercise. However, you also don't want to be too flexible. I mean, I sometimes found that people picked, just cherry picked a couple of elements out of Pucker. So, like, they liked this workshop format where we're using card writing, and the five forces, Michael Porter's five forces format as the organizing principle. And then otherwise they do everything the way they have always been doing it, in a top-down way, in a non-participatory way. That is also not what we want.
And in those cases, we prefer if people don't call it Pucker.
Yeah, hopefully. But the second way of looking at it would be like this. Initially, I wasn't quite sure to what extent it would be possible to transfer Pucker and to train people in doing it. And then we realized, starting in a couple of countries, including South Africa, that it was actually quite possible. And I think what we did with those Pucker training exercises, Pucker training courses, was to lower the barriers to entry for newcomers to come into LED, for people who had a facilitation or community development or business development or entrepreneurship development to move into LED. Because when you look at it, LED is a very complex and it's a huge field. And you could probably go to university for years and you would still find new areas that you would have to study and huge piles of literature that you would have to go through. So you could perceive that the barriers to entry are enormously high, and we definitely don't want to give that picture. Now, with Pucker, what we achieved was to give a tool to individual facilitators that was very, very robust. So if they were not flexible, if they just stuck to the manual, if they just did it as it was introduced there, step by step, and if they did that properly, they would still get a very, very good result. And I think maybe that was one of the big benefits of Pucker, just to make sure that many more people than the odd, very experienced and very good consultant was able to do meaningful work in LED processes.
And I've personally witnessed this. I've seen so many cases where people get many of the tools right, and then they get a very good result, and then it's their first time ever that they actually conduct something like that. And it's maybe very important to say that if you go into a place as an external consultant and you run a Pucker exercise with many local stakeholders and involve them in many workshops, and then you go away and you write up the results, you've just basically done, you know, a very different kind of desktop study. You still did not actually involve the locals in the analysis. And one thing we've been pushing for in Pucker is to get people to say locals have to do the analysis. Should we maybe just quickly look at where Pucker has been used and then and now of Pucker? You know, I can start off by saying then, 10 or 12 years ago, there were a very small group of people running Pucker exercises. Now, basically at any given point in time, there's somebody somewhere in the world running a Pucker. Maybe we should do a couple of these then and nows, and maybe look at some other then and nows.
Well, to look at the kind of places where it's being applied, we have run training courses, and there are practitioners in various countries in Latin America, and in some countries in Africa, in some countries in Europe and Central Asia, and in many Asian countries. And what we found was that, well, it was often introduced through donor projects. And we found that in some cases it started and then it just withered, it just went away. Whereas in other countries we have very lively and very robust Pucker communities and many people who find that it's a very very robust and very useful tool and who keep using it. And who also know what its specific role is, that Pucker is not everything, that it is one of the things you want to do in your LED process, and that it is particularly useful when you start activities in a new locality as one of the tools, one of the things that you use at an entry phase. Another point around now and then, I think, has to do with the way we explain the whole thing. So some people are deeply convinced that Pucker is only and exclusively about quick wins. And that is because we have always explained the importance of quick wins. We have always made the point that if you don't get a quick win in a process that depends on interaction between so many stakeholders, and if those stakeholders don't notice relatively quickly within just a few months that the effort they are taking actually is useful and renders benefits, then many of them are going to lose interest and are going to be distracted by their everyday duties and their normal activities. It applies to LED champions in the private sector, who tend to be very, very busy people. Everybody knows, every practitioner, I think, is aware of the fact that that quick wins do play some role. And I think one of the differences we made was to say, well, you must actually address this issue of quick wins in a very strategic and a conceptually sound manner. And you really want to highlight quick wins and apply specific tools to make sure that you do get quick wins out of a PACA exercise. However, we have never really argued that LED is only about quick wins. I mean, stating that would be nonsense and foolish. Of course, you want to move to more catalytic activities, more strategic activities over time. But in order to get there, you need those quick wins because they are going to create a process and a dynamic that then will take you to a situation where local stakeholders agree, okay, we really need strategic interventions now and let's use some strategy method to get those activities.
So I can remember when I ran my first PACA, I felt this immense pressure to produce 25 or 30 proposals. And I really felt like a really good facilitator if I could come up with this variety of proposals that seemed to address everything that was very obviously wrong in that local economy, in that sector that I looked at. And over time I've come to realize, so that's the now, I've come to realize that it's not the number of proposals, but figuring out which three or four or maybe six proposals can lead to a knock-on effect to other changes in behavior. So maybe that is also a then and a now.
I think it's something that I tried to explain from the very beginning, but it's really difficult to get that message across because as a consultant, as a traditional consultant who comes in from the outside to do some analysis of a local economy, you will typically be judged against the quality of your report. So if you don't come up with a good report and if you don't come up with a long list of very sexy proposals, many of your readers will think, no, well, this guy is very stupid and very unimaginative. The problem is when you come in, say, with your set of best practices and you try to introduce that to the locality, well, as I said before, there is often something like an immune system. Local stakeholders don't really listen to these things. If they feel that there is some person who's dressed in a strange way and is coming up with weird ideas, tries to sell those ideas to them, they just don't find that convincing. And local stakeholders rather say, okay, so if you think that we should have a high-tech incubator, okay, do it. But we don't think that we want to do this because we have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, that also leads us to the challenge that what we've often seen is that you can't just parachute. In the beginning, I think we parachuted into places. And we thought that a PACA exercise is quick, 2 or 3 weeks to prepare, 2 weeks intense field work, and then maybe 6 or 7 days to follow up. And we were very naive when we did that because we constantly, and I think that different countries responded differently, but we now know that it's very important to keep pressure, to keep a hand on this process if you're an external funder and to support this process. And maybe a topic related to that is that initially we very much trusted the PACA framework, you know, the mobilization phase, the preparation phase, the fieldwork phase, and the follow-up and implementation phases. Now we know that it's very important to actually design a process that fits into an existing variety, actually, of processes. So in every locality where we work, there's chambers of commerce and local government meetings and all kinds of public events and school holidays and all kinds of things. And the trick now, that the practitioners that are pulling off the really successful PACAs are the ones that are able to integrate their PACA design into this very complicated and very busy local environment.
And at the same time, I think it's also too important to mention that there is one other point that we've learned over time, namely that very often, if not most of the time, we are involved in change activities. So very often we find ourselves in a situation where the purpose of the Pukka ultimately is not to find out how to accelerate ongoing and nice development processes in a given locality, but rather to change the mindset, to change the outlook of local stakeholders, to help them to get a better understanding of the pressure they are under, the challenges they are facing, but also the opportunities that are awaiting them, and helping them to adjust their mindset and their behavior to, well, the realities of a globalized economy. And I think maybe this change element and the importance to also explicitly refer to change management techniques and tools is something that we probably didn't really understand in the early phase of Pukka.
I think that we should leave the rest of our discussion to a future show where we can actually, in a more detailed way, unpack the building blocks that make up the Pukka exercise.
Let's do that. Thanks a lot for your time.
Oh, thank you, Jörg. It's so nice to have you in South Africa again.